You're listening to the Apple Insider Podcast.
Welcome to episode 46 of our show, where we discuss the latest news about Apple, iPhone, iPad, Mac, Apple Watch, Apple TV, and more. We're recording on Thursday, December 11th, 2015. I'm your host, Victor Marks, and with me is my esteemed colleague, Mikey Campbell. Mikey, how are you?
Pretty good, sir.
Fantastic. I want to jump right in. We've got a lot to cover. Let's go through this. Let's talk Apple TV. So the Apple TV App Store gains over 400 apps each week, and nearly half of all of them are games, the data shows. That seems like a lot, doesn't it?
Well, what are you comparing it to? Are you comparing it to iOS, or are you comparing it to another smart TV platform?
I'm just thinking that 400 a week feels like a big number. I'm not really comparing it to anything, but that says that there are over 2,600 apps, an average of about 447 new ones each week. And this data comes to us from App Figures blog, which showed that there's basically steady growth, right?
Yeah. I mean, I see that the developers want to get on Apple TV. I mean, how many of those 400 apps are substantial titles, you know?
Right. I'll give you that. It's just as the regular App Store for iOS has got a number of apps that you would probably never want to download. People are easily updating stuff. It may not be the premium things yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I mean, it brings up another topic of surfacing good apps on Apple TV, which I think is kind of difficult still. They haven't really worked it out yet.
Yeah.
They added the category section. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like when I go into the App Store on tvOS, it's just, I see either the same apps over and over again, or, I mean, it's just like I'm lost and it's difficult.
Discoverability is hard, man.
It's made even harder when you're not, directly interacting with the user interface, like you're doing it with a remote.
Yeah, you're separated from the interface, even though you've got the touch panel on the remote. You are not touching your TV directly.
Right. I mean, so it's that added, you know, milliseconds, right, to reach over and touch something, but it does make a difference when you're browsing thousands of apps.
Well, what I want is a different way of sorting. You know, I like the games. I want to get games for my Apple TV. And my problem is that I want to be able to search for games that are compatible with controllers and are multiplayer with local controllers. There are a bunch of games that say they're multiplayer, but they're multiplayer online with other players elsewhere in the world, or crazy stuff. Like, I want to know that I can bring two controllers and play locally. And it's impossible to know that. And it's impossible to search for that.
Yeah. They should do, they should take some cues from the gaming industry and maybe label each app with like a small icon. I mean, they have the space, right? It's on a TV now. So they don't have to, they can be liberal with their tick marks or something. Like
I would like to see search for games that support multiplayer and be able to see, instead of just the icon for one controller, show me the icon for two controllers. You know, and let me search for that. My wants aren't crazy. They're simple demands.
Do you have a controller?
I have three controllers, actually. I have two of the Mad Catz CTRL-I, and I have one of the SteelSeries Nimbus.
I don't have one.
The SteelSeries, if you do get one, the SteelSeries is very, very good. The controls on it, the joysticks on it, feel like quality. The placement and the feedback that you get from the buttons is very good. It charges via lightning. The Mad Catz doesn't have that same feel. It's hard to quantify, but the joysticks don't feel quite as smooth is the best way I can characterize it.
Yeah. Have you ever opened one up?
You know, I haven't.
Oh, yeah. So they use these very, well, I'm not sure about the Mad Catz and stuff, but I mean, I used to take apart my PlayStation controllers to see what's inside.
No. Yeah.
Yes. DualShock. Yeah, but it depends on how they make them. Some of them have, I don't think the Mad Cats has a full analog joysticks on it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It could be the springs that they're using, and depend if they use like metal washers instead of plastic washers. Plastic washers sometimes are, they kind of bind and stuff.
Right.
But I don't know. Whatever. Cost savings. Well,
what I like about the Mad Cats is that it's four double A's, and it has a thing that comes off the back of it in the center of the controller between the A and B and R and L rockers. And it allows you to mount an iPad or an iPhone if you so desired. I've never used that part of it. I like using it with the Apple TV, but it's nice that it's really designed to be that flexible.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it comes down to if you put rechargeable batteries or alkalines. I kind of like the alkalines, but.
Right. I have a whole bunch of batteries. It's certain. When are we going to get rid of those things? You know?
Well, not yet.
Yeah, I know. But, look.
We got a story about batteries later on in the show. Stay tuned.
Right.
But about the Apple TV, you know, it looks like a lot of the apps that are coming for it are sticking to charging users for apps.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Free to play and ad supported or in-app purchase is the way that people seem to monetize for iPhone. Mm-hmm. But with Apple TV, it looks like every game is hitting you up for $2.99 or $99 or $4.99 or $10.99. There's some out there that this study says are as high as $59.99. What's the app that's $59.99? Do you know that?
I have not seen it.
We got to find that.
Hmm.
I'm not against someone charging $59 for an app. I just want to know what it is.
Zuzuvela for tvOS or something.
Vuvuzela?
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to know what that one is. We haven't found it yet, but we will.
I mean, well, I don't know. That's kind of smart, I think. I mean, I'm not sure they're planning it this way, but would you want to be bombarded with in-app purchases when you're sitting on your couch watching TV?
Oh, God, no.
Yeah. I mean, it's too close to I think the association in your brain is too close to TV. And when there's something out of the ordinary, like an in-app purchase, I think something clicks. And well, I don't know.
There was this old patent really a couple of years ago, right? There's a patent that used to be something like they would pause the show, and if you didn't stand up and do jumping jacks while McDonald's ad was on, they wouldn't resume. Yeah. You remember that?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it's not a far leap from in-app purchases to continue playing your game to standing up and doing jumping jacks for McDonald's to continue your show.
Yeah, right. Right.
Crazy. So the other part of the Apple TV story that I want to talk about right now is about the Apple remote. Specifically, the Apple TV OS was updated to 9.1, and the Apple remote app, both for iOS and Apple Watch, is now compatible with Apple TV.
Thank God.
Are you happy?
So happy.
How happy are you?
Very, very happy. Can you tell in my voice how happy I am?
I can tell you're ecstatic.
So excited.
Well, I mean, we know that it sucks that there's no Bluetooth keyboard support for this, just because entering in your password for everything is terrible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But...
Well, I mean, yeah, no, it's gotten to the point, well, before the update, it was to the point where I would download an app or whatever, and if I saw a keyboard, I would just close it. Because it's ridiculous. I mean, it's just so not Apple to have something like that. I mean, they changed it. The grid format was not good. You know what I'm talking about? The old
grid style. The five wide by nine tall or whatever it was.
Right. But swiping back and forth across, what is this?
I don't know.
It's alphanumeric, right? It's alphanumeric. So more than 26.
It's alphabet 26 across and then number row below that and symbol row below that.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So swiping back and forth, I get along better with
that than I do with the grid.
Really?
I do. I know you're going to disagree with me, but the thing that annoyed me about grid was that it doesn't wrap around.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, the grid doesn't or the
grid doesn't, man. If you hit the right side of the grid, you're on the right side and you have to left back off of it. You can't right and get to the other side.
Yeah.
I want it to play like Pac-Man so I can go ahead and swipe right and get back to where I need to.
Yeah. That whole, the whole soft keyboard for Apple TV is just, I don't know, so terrible.
I think my comment is that being the best of a bad bunch of solutions is still bad. I would say that Apple's done a really good job at trying to be the best soft keyboard, because I've tried a bunch of them. You know, I had that Amazon Fire Stick that I've talked about before. I've had other things that have had soft keyboards. And they're almost all universally terrible. And the Apple one was better, but not good. And yeah. I'm pretty good with swiping, man. I can swipe with some accuracy, but I don't want to have to do it.
I mean, the accelerated UI,
right?
Acceleration.
You swipe faster, yeah. And it swipes further across for right. you. Yeah.
Or if you swipe like just a bit of the thing, you kind of just touch the touchpad.
Well, what I've gotten used to is trying to roll my thumb across it like I'm giving a fingerprint, and when I do that, then I get really accurate.
Gotta try that.
No one should have to know that is my problem.
Yeah, right, right. Well, I guess we don't have to worry about that anymore with the
praise the gods of Cupertino. We have the Apple Remote app. We can do it from our phones.
Yeah, good.
Excellent. On to a topic that I love to talk about, payment systems. Yes, I'm a payment nerd and I'm terrible about it. But you know that I like talking about Apple Pay. And Walmart, in their infinite wisdom, has decided to launch a rival system to Apple Pay. Indeed. Now, they've been a part of one before, right? What were they doing before?
What do you mean?
It was
Currency?
Yeah, Currency, yeah. Which we all made fun of, rightfully
Clever.
Yeah.
Well, still doing it. I mean, they're
But this
part
current
of-
thing is not Currency. This current thing is a Currency, and it's QR code based, and the Currency was QR code based.
Yeah. Well, Currency is in beta still. Mm-hmm. So, but Walmart is part of that MCX merchant consumer or whatever, customer exchange consumer, merchant consumer. I don't know. Anyway, they're part of that
right.
consortium and they're still backing Currency. So I guess if and when Currency actually comes out, they'll be supporting that as well. But they're pushing
okay,
their
so this
Walmart
is
Pay.
Walmart Pay. And Walmart Pay is integrated into Walmart's mobile app, which, by the way, I got to say, they updated the app over the past few days, mm-hmm. and the new app icon has a Santa hat on it.
Cute.
Very classy move. But Walmart Pay is integrated into Walmart's mobile app, and so you can pay with any credit card, debit card, or preloaded Walmart gift card. So here's why I'm going to end up using Walmart Pay, even though I'm not really excited about using Walmart Pay, is that when you shop with the Walmart app, what you do, you go to Walmart, you shop, which first of all, I know some of our listeners probably don't. Our European listeners don't. They shop at Asda if they're in the UK. And there are people that simply on principle won't shop at Walmart. But if you shop at Walmart, get the app. You go, you buy. At the end, you get the receipt, and the receipt has a QR code on it and a traditional barcode. You scan that into the savings catcher section of the Walmart app, and it searches all of the deals from stores all around. You'll search like 46 other stores to see which items on your receipt were cheaper elsewhere, and then they will price match.
Yeah,
and then they go ahead and put the priced matched money into a gift card in the app. And I've tried to do this before where you take the gift card and show them the gift card number and they punch it into the number pad on their point of sale machine.
Right.
And it's a giant pain in the ass for effectively saving $5 or $10. And so if they use the QR code for that and they can scan it and it works, then fine. They've made an improvement. But I don't really want to load my credit and debit cards into there and pay through it that way.
Right.
You know, that's not where I'm at.
Yeah. I mean, it's good for Walmart customers, right? I mean, it sounds like an easy thing.
What would be better for Walmart customers would be simply, you know, doing Apple Pay and putting the Walmart gift card into a store loyalty card and passbook. I mean, wallet.
But then Walmart wouldn't be in charge of everything, of the process. I mean, that's where they're wanting to go, right?
I correct me if I'm wrong. I thought that the reason that they were doing this stuff is because they didn't want to pay transaction fees to Visa, even though they're already getting the lowest in the business for them. Wasn't that part of what this fight is about?
Yes. Well, behind the scenes, yes. But really, it's about the consumer, Victor. They're thinking about the customer.
Tell me more about this thinking about the customer.
I don't know, because that's about all they, that's about as deep as they go.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I mean, it is obviously a play against processors and the middlemen. And if any retailer can pull off a coup, it would be Walmart. They have enormous reach. So I think we might see this translate into either leverage against Visa for even lower or no fees, and or just a replacement altogether one day.
Right. I'm placing my weight behind Apple Pay. I don't think that currency or Walmart Pay, I would be surprised if it were wildly successful.
The you Walmart, agree with that verdict? Walmart Pay or yeah. Apple Pay? I don't know.
Let me be very clear. I believe in Apple Pay. I'm not convinced about Walmart Pay.
Define wildly successful. I'm sure a lot of people are going to use this.
Are you? You think that there are a lot of people that are going to use this?
Mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of people like you or are like you or I in that they care about mobile payment technology and all that stuff. They just care.
First of all, mobile payment technology is not a big thing anyway, right? It's still cash, and especially at Walmart, it's still cash. And so...
Well, it's interesting about the Walmart one is that you can also pay with cash, right? It's kind of like a, not over the top, but I mean, it's just like a supplement to their loyalty card, I suppose, where you can ring in and then pay with cash.
They don't really have a loyalty card, but okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, someday maybe they will. I don't know.
Here's what we'll do. I'm a little bit tepid on it, but I'm going to end up using it just by virtue of Savings Catcher in the Walmart app. And when I use it, I'll come back and we'll talk about it then.
Indeed.
Yes, we will. Speaking about more of Apple's competitors, Tim Cook said in a statement that Apple will not race Google to the bottom of the education market, and he calls Chromebooks test machines. Mm-hmm. Now, you wrote this story.
Mm-hmm.
This was at an Hour of Code educational coding session in New York that he said this. Now, Hour of Code is this idea that students everywhere should be exposed to programming, and you can learn a little bit about what it is to program within an hour and using Scratch programming language, essentially. It's a pretty cool thing. I've had my children go through the Hour of Code sessions, and they're awesome. So Cook says that Chromebooks are test machines. What do you think about that? You agree?
I'm not really familiar with Chromebooks in education. You might be having kids, right? Do you see that at your kids' schools?
Yeah, actually, at one of my daughter's schools, they do have Chromebooks. They do use them for education. They use Google Docs, and the benefit is that it's basically the benefit of Google Docs and a Chromebook, right? The Chromebook doesn't have local storage, so if something happens to the machine, you close it or throw it away and you pick up another one.
Yeah.
They're almost disposable because there's nothing saved on it. You just grab another. And because Google Drive and Docs and Sheets and all of those things are all cloud-based, you just sign in and keep going. And my daughter came home and she said, I have to use mommy's laptop. I have to sign into Chrome. I have to have the laptop. And I said, no, you don't. What do you mean I don't? And I installed the Google apps on her iPad mini, the docs and sheets and presentations, or slides as they call it. And she was able to do all of the work that she was doing in class, picked up right at home on the iPad, and finished the group assignment.
So they're basically, our education publication publishers, are they creating software that interfaces with Google Docs, or is it just like a PDFs and stuff?
The class stuff that she's doing is all just document-based type stuff that you could have done on any computer. And what I'm not seeing a lot of from educational publishers is stuff focused on Chromebook exactly, but it's all around helping the teacher understand, you know, their curricula and managing it all through docs, managing it all through these kinds of things. You know, obviously anything that's going to run on a Chromebook has to run in the browser. And it's possible to do extensions for the browser, and the Chromebook can handle most of those. But there's not a whole lot of richness there to it.
Yeah. The apps or the web apps that they're going to be running on there won't have the depth of something built, you know, on a proper platform, right?
Well, I'm not sure I agree with that, because you can do a heck of a lot in the web, especially, and this is going to be interesting, right? A lot of stuff's been made with Node.js, yeah. Right? A lot of rich things have been done in Ajax over the years. These are, you know, fancy names for different kinds of web technologies that allow you to do rich things in the browser. Mm-hmm. And with Apple's Swift, you could do rich things in the browser too. So there's no reason why the browser has to be the limitation. It's just that no one's gone deep enough thinking about the paradigm of what this should be and what should be done so that the computer enhances the curriculum and is a part of it deeply, as opposed to being, here's a tool, we're going to use it for file storage. Mm. And I would say that on the iPad side of it, that there's a lot of work there as well. Now, you can do some great stuff with education with an iPad. At the same time, I would say that the danger is there too. If you don't have good guidance about it, you know, if you're not using iTunes U, if you're not using some of the tools that are out there, then you run into the same questions, right? And iBooks haven't exactly, iBooks for Education, has that taken off in a big way?
I don't
think that it has. I think it's still early days.
Yeah. I mean, there are teachers who do create their courses on there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's easy to do, I guess, but at the same time, I don't know how many schools are going to be adopting it. If you create your curriculum for your specific class on iPad, how is that going to jibe with the rest of your institutions? You know, and what if you were just one teacher out of an island in a sea of Chromebooks?
Yeah. I think that this is still very early days. You know, we know that Apple and IBM announced in June an experimental expansion to the Mobile First for iOS initiative. So they're looking into how to use apps and services to provide teachers with real-time student data analytics.
Yeah.
I think Cook said it best, right? Cook said, the next step is getting the schools over time to make it a requirement. We're hoping to get their curiosity up and then get the system basically to take the next step. So it's pretty acknowledged.
For that, he was talking about coding.
Right. But I would say that, well, he's talking about coding specifically, that it expands to every part of the curriculum when you're talking about bringing the iPad or bringing the computer. I mean, if you look at this, what are the requirements for computer competency in the schools? And they're pretty much, can you do documents? Can you do basic spreadsheet stuff with calculations? Can you manipulate a database? Right?
Yeah.
It's not an amazing set of core competency testing for this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. The requirements are very old. And in fact, I was seeing technology classes that quizzed on the history of computing, and they were talking about things as if they were modern, and they're still talking about floppy disks. I saw a list of things to buy for school come home a few years ago, and it had floppy disks on it. I sent my kid with a USB drive because I know better.
Indeed.
So I believe this stuff is coming. It's just coming slowly.
Yeah. Well, it's been coming for a long time.
Mm-hmm. It has been coming for a long, long time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, the school that I used to, that I went to, I think they're, well, I mean, they were all Mac when I was there. But I think they...
It's pretty rare.
We're very progressive. Very progressive.
Very, very spendy.
Well, it was a private school.
You had a school with a budget.
Yeah. Anyway, they were talking about when I was like in, I don't know, maybe third grade or something, they were talking about doing a laptop per child kind of thing. And I think they actually started rolling that out a few years ago. So now I'm pretty sure that all...
A few years after you graduated.
Yeah, right. So, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, Maybe they started rolling out like a pilot. And I think all kids have to have a MacBook there now. I don't think they moved to iPad yet. I'm not sure. But I'm pretty sure at a certain grade, they have to buy, well, they don't supply them. So you're going to have to buy your own MacBook. And I mean, if your entire school is built around that platform or Apple's iOS/Mac OS platform, it makes for a really good ecosystem, right? Mm-hmm. But I think there's, when you start going with like the Chromebooks and, those other devices that rely on the web as a platform.
Yeah.
It becomes much more, the waters become muddy, I think. There's not that focus there. So I'm not sure what the right answer is. I don't know. I mean, both seem to have their benefits, but I don't know. I wouldn't count Apple out. I mean, they have decades of experience in education. So I would trust them that they know what they're doing.
Yeah. One of the interesting things, and this is something I know from experience, is that one of the things that stops schools from choosing Apple as a provider for technology is sometimes the IT department.
Mm.
And it's the IT people who get to make recommendations that can consider during purchasing decisions. And if they're trained in things like Windows, they make recommendations for things that they're trained in because it's a part of employment security. Mm-hmm. And also what they know well. And, it's a task when they're instructed to take on something that they didn't really believe in. So for this kind of segues into my next ad read. And it's true, for some people, IT is a task and not a career. So Bushel is sponsoring the Apple Insider podcast this week. And Bushel is a simple-to-use cloud-based tool that anyone can use to leverage and manage Apple devices in the workplace. Bushel allows you to easily set up and protect all the devices you distribute to your team or to those that your team already has. You can provide access to company email accounts, install work apps to devices individually or all at once, and separately protect your team's personal data from company data. And if a device is ever lost or stolen, you can remotely lock it or wipe it from company data completely. And you can access all of these features to easily manage your Apple devices wherever you want, whenever you are. Now, that's kind of a way of giving people the security that they feel they have with a Chromebook, for example. The idea of the Chromebook is you can throw it away or wipe it remotely, and Bushel helps you manage Apple devices the same way. Bushel makes the complex simple so you can focus on what matters most and take back your nights and weekends. Your first three devices are free forever, and additional devices are $2 a month with no contracts or commitments. Learn more at bushel.com/Apple Insider. So I'm thinking about this and imagining the tech department at a school employing something like this. And of course, it would have to pass budget, but the idea that you could do that seems like it would be attractive.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. What do your kids think about Chromebooks? They use the school's books that are provided, and then they don't get to take them home.
Correct.
Is that how it works?
They're not taking them home.
Oh, interesting.
They're the Samsung Chromebook from a couple of years ago.
Cool. They like it?
Kind of. I mean, I feel like she senses that it's slow.
Mm. But they're exposed to both, right? I mean, at home, they have iPad and Mac.
At home they have iPad. The Mac they're exposed to is my wife's Mac from 2008. That's okay. I have an admission to make to our listeners. My wife uses a 2008 MacBook, 13-inch in aluminum, running Snow Leopard 10.6.8.
Nice.
I am a bad husband. I've crippled my wife with this old computer.
Someone argue that those old OS 10s are the best.
10.6.8 was stable, man. 10.6.8 sometimes gets compared to being the XP of Mac OS 10 for its stability and longevity.
I really haven't had any issues with that, but I'm always running, well, not always, but I'm pretty like one 6 months or a year off the latest hardware. So I can't speak to how it works on legacy stuff, but I really haven't had any problems.
10.7 and 10.9 a little bit were kind of like the Vista for me. They, you know, they were there and they worked, but things weren't quite dialed in. And 10.8 got better, and El Cap is pretty good.
Yeah. Well, QA was going down the tubes.
Yeah. 10.6 feel like they're rock stable, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, the kids are exposed to iPads. That's pretty much their deal. And Apple TV, and they love Apple TV. And one of them is really digging the new Apple TV.
Really?
Yeah.
What do they like about it? The touchpad remote?
Or? The touchpad remote, which, by the way, is off limits to them for now. They're using the silver remote and the old white remote. They're off limits because I don't want them to drop the thing and crack the trackpad on it. But I'm going to be getting a cover for it real soon, and they'll be able to use it then.
Why don't you just buy the tether?
We had an experience with Wiimotes with tether, and I'm just going to get the cover for it.
Ah, gotcha.
So talking about Apple TV, you know, one of the things that you and I have been talking about in the past is Apple streaming TV talks and the idea that Apple's going to introduce their own streaming service. And apparently these talks seem to have fallen through. What do we know about that? Neil wrote a story this week, and Neil's not with us right now, but Neil wrote a story about...
Yeah, Neil's in
Jamaica.
Far-off island nation.
Yeah.
How dare he leave us here? Yeah, so it's been rumored for, what, years, 5 or more years, that Apple would come out with a over-the-top service, get a bunch of channels together, streaming over the internet instead of through cable pipe. But apparently they put that on hold, right? They put that initiative, that entire plan on hold because...
Because?
Well, because why?
Because the people in charge at TV places are dorks. What happened, as I understand it, is that Apple wanted to push for a skinny bundle of channels. They wanted it priced less than $30 a month, and they wanted it to be something that basically users would appreciate, right? Mm-hmm. You don't need to buy hundreds and hundreds and only watch two. You need to buy the ones you want to watch. And Apple wanted to have a base package of maybe about 12 channels, there more or less. And the content owners, that is the people with their networks, didn't want their networks to be left out. You know, you get ABC has all of the ESPNs and Disney and ABC Family and all of this. And Apple said, great, give us just the one. Mm-hmm. And if people want, they can opt in. And, you know, they were like, nope, we're taking our ball and going home. Can't have skinny bundle.
Yeah. But I mean, they're moving towards that with tvOS, right? Eddie Q said basically that the appification of TV is heading down that road.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you've seen offerings like on-demand apps from ABC and HBO. So, I mean, they're slowly chipping away at that wall. And one day, I mean, it could happen. One day it might render the idea of a skinny bundle obsolete, right? When you have... Mm-hmm. When you can get even more granular and pick which specific channels you want, the pricing might be there. It might be comparable or better than
We see some of that with Sling TV, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah. A bit, to a certain extent. But I think what Apple's going for is a wider, obviously a wider selection, but I mean, something that's comprehensive as far as a, both broadcast and cable.
So Les Moonves, he said to Business Insider that he thinks Apple's putting the program on the back burner.
Well, yeah, that's what he heard, right? But right. I mean, yeah,
they had conversations on it. He thinks that they've pressed the hold button.
Yeah.
He thinks they stopped negotiating months ago.
Mm-hmm. However, he, being the luminary that he is, he said that something like that will inevitably come about. I mean, it's just something that's going to happen. I suppose you could, an apt analogy would be iTunes, right? And the digital music revolution.
I mean, it seems to me that what Moonves wants and what the content providers want is to put more networks into the package and at a higher price point.
Of course. I mean, it's all about,
you know, his plan is that it has all of the four major traditional broadcast networks. Right. Your ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC. And then you put maybe 10 or so other channels in there, and he wants to charge $40 for it.
All right. Well, what's the proposition for Apple though? Right. I mean, you can make certain concessions in licensing, but and once you do and people start switching over, then, I mean, basically you own that, that route to content, right? Mm-hmm. Once they switch over, I mean, content owners or broadcasters kind of just lose control at that point. So is it worth maybe negotiating down a bit and taking a initial hit? And then, you know, once you gain market control, it's game over. But I don't know.
Comcast doesn't want their bubble popped, man. They're happy.
Well, of course not.
Bubble.
I mean, they've. And they are a tough group. Much tougher than the RIAA, I think.
Oh, no, that's a tough call. Who is harder, Comcast, RIAA, like, MPAA, or... wow, that's a hard one.
I feel like the tech companies are a bit more shrewd, and they maybe are a bit more cutthroat than the more traditional... associations.
Wow.
I don't know. I feel like they're willing to do more to keep status quo.
Very, very tough call. I would say you're probably right, but gosh, all of them seem hard.
Yeah.
Well, that was something hard. I want to talk about something easy. Tim Cook announced, or Apple announced, and Tim Cook lauds, a new iPhone 6S smart battery case designed as easy to use, right? So Apple introduced this battery case. And we've had battery cases for a long while from people like Unu and Mophie and others. But Apple's is a little bit different. First, it's from Apple. Second of all, it's got a giant hump on the back.
Yep.
And Cook says he probably wouldn't call it the hump, but I think we're going to have to all call it the hump.
It's a hump. It's a hump, Tim. You can't change the
it's the Humpty Dance
definition, Tim. Of... words. Reality distortion field is not strong with Tim Cook.
Not yet, anyway. So instead of being a hard case like many of the other battery cases have been, this is a flexible elastic case, right? A fluoroelastomer. So it allows you to bend the top portion out of the way when you insert it and remove it.
At least part of it is, yeah.
You bend the top portion a little bit back over the hump.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it bends all the way back. It allows
So it leans back like 30 degrees, yeah. Right?
I mean, it's a nifty design, but the hunchback is just, oh God, I don't know.
So what do you need the battery case? First of all,
I do not need the battery case.
Right. And Cook points out most users probably don't need this at all. When I travel to CES and I'm covering the show floor and I'm running my phone full on all the time, I use a battery brick. Mm-hmm. And that's only because the battery brick has a lot more milliamp hours than the battery case.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's when I do it. And it's an exceptional case. It's not the thing I want to have on my phone all the time.
Right.
So.
Well, I mean, what's
why'd they make this thing? What was the point of making this thing if most users don't need it and most users definitely don't need it day to day?
It could be a play to something down the road, maybe wireless charging, get people inured to the fact that they're having a semi hump on the back of their phone, if and when they start using inductive charging on the iPhone, they can release a case for back models that can also use the inductive charging, but you'll need a case to do it. Smart charging case.
Okay, so you're suggesting there's that a rumor says, or you're making up a rumor that says...
No, I'm making it up.
Mikey's rumor, ladies and gentlemen. Mikey's rumor says that there's a hump on the case which also could contain wireless charging someday, if not today. And they introduced the wireless charging feature. You're already used to the idea of having a phone with a hump.
Well, it doesn't have to be a hump, right? I mean, it could be like if you say you have the 6S, right?
Yeah.
And they release inductive charging with a 7, but you really want inductive charging on your 6S.
Yes.
You can buy a smart charging case or smart charger and then stick that on your 6S and have the inductive charging.
But this is kind of interesting because Apple doesn't really do this whole retroactive stuff outside of software updates.
Indeed. This is so, the new Apple.
Can I have the old Apple back?
I need to talk to Tim Cook about that and Johnny Ive.
I don't know, man. I can't. All right.
I don't know. It's okay product. I mean, some people, I think it was Nilay Patel, floated the idea that they designed it as such to get around Mophie's patents, which I don't think that's a credible line of reasoning. But
I haven't looked at the patents, so I don't know for sure. But
I looked at the patents. I don't think it's a credible line of reasoning.
Thank you.
But still, the design is okay. I mean, it's not a two-piece design. You can slip it on and off. It also comes with a female lightning port on the bottom, which I think is key. So it's a throughput, right? Mm. Instead of, you know, covering the lightning altogether. So,
well, they were trying to get third parties to use the female lightning port, and they offered it to them. Mm. And no one's really taken advantage of that. I mean, we know that the Steel Series has for the controller, but, you know, where's the Mophie with the female lightning port?
Yeah. Well, it could be. I mean, how much would it cost for the bill of materials, right? How much would it cost for that?
The connector is still the connector, and you pay the license fee. So you're adding money. You're adding
coming from your
My numbers are going to be off because the time has passed and
adjust for
changed.
Inflation. Adjust for inflation.
No, I'm just going to throw this out there that suppose the fee, hypothetically, so that I'm not nailing it down, is a couple of dollars for the license that comes off the having sold the device. And this, I promise, guys, this is not accurate, but it's just proposed hypothetically. And the cost of the connector is, you know, a dime. And that's with the goodies that you have to have with the connector, like the authentication bits that tell it I'm a charge case and I do data and, right? Because it has to identify itself. It's not just dumb power.
Yeah.
And also, by the way, I like having 2 amps, right?
Mm.
So that it can tell it that it wants the full fast charge. So you add money, right? You're adding a little more than a couple of bucks to it.
And in retail dollars, what does that translate to?
Multiply by 5.
Indeed.
$10 on top of your retail price-ish.
I wonder if the female port that they added on there, I wonder if it's hardwired to the usual male connector, or is it like an add-on piece? I mean, does it come as a male-female
package? No, it's not sold that way. You have to have a board in between.
Interesting.
There's a PCB in there.
So there's another extra.
Well, because you have to have a PCB in there, because besides having, it's not just direct pass through. It wouldn't be one-to-one wires. You need to have a charge controller, because if you charge, so lithium polymer batteries, right? Lithium ion and lithium polymer batteries need to be charged in a specific way. You have to do it to manage heat. You need to do it to manage overvolts. You need to do it to manage the way in which you charge the cells within the battery so that they're charged evenly and not one faster or more than the others. And so you have a charge controller chip, and the charge controller regulates all of this to keep it all within that ideal spec so that your battery A, doesn't explode, and B, lasts a very long time. That's why these batteries can last for about a year to 2 years before you see them dropping off a cliff under normal use, right? 300 cycles, 600 cycles. You know, 300 is where it's normal behavior. But after 300, you start to see the performance drop off of the battery.
Yeah.
And so the charge controller does that. So if you're building a battery case, you have to have the port to connect to the iPhone, the port to connect power to the battery case, whether that's micro or lightning or whatever. You have to have a charge controller. There's parts here. And so you have to have a board inside.
I'm just looking at the iFixit teardown. I think they just posted it.
I haven't looked at that yet. Now you can tell if I'm right or if I'm wrong.
Yeah. So they offload it to what looks to be a fairly big Logic, well, daughter board. And then the, it looks like the Lightning is one piece. Like it's a male, female connected. And then they just, route the wires to the Logic board. On, I don't know, where does that go? Looks like it goes right under the battery, unless it's a fold over.
So yeah. Some of that is just placement, right? They're figuring out how to pack it in there. But the board itself looks very thin, right? It's a very short board, and it's between the battery and the connectors.
Yeah, so it has like, let's see. So it has
and
the
in
usual...
fact, it looks like it's not a hard printed circuit board. It's a flexible printed circuit cable.
Yeah, it's a flex board. But it looks like they have the usual Lightning IC charger, the charging IC, and then I don't know what's on that board though. Yeah, they don't name the stuff, but it is a flex board.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Well, it's time. What I'd like to talk to you about another sponsor. Another one of our sponsors today is Casper Mattresses, and Casper is an obsessively engineered American-made mattress at a shockingly fair price, and you can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/insider and using the code insider. So, Mikey, you and I have used a ton of sleep monitors, right?
Yes, we have.
And the reason why we do that is because we're really just trying to get better sleep, yes?
For the most part.
Yeah.
Also, I have a addiction to technology that precludes me.
And admitting that is the first step. But the point of Casper is that, right, if you're trying to get better sleep, start with the mattress. So they bring two different technologies together for better night's sleep. They bring together latex foam and memory foam, and they layer them so that you've got the right amount of sink, the right amount of bounce, and the right amount of support, no matter how you sleep, you know, your side, your back, your front, whatever. And they've got a risk-free trial and return policy. I wonder if they deliver to Hawaii. They must deliver to Hawaii. You got to try
one. One would hope.
You got to try one.
You're going to lend me the money to buy it, or?
Well, they've got this trial, free risk trial.
Indeed.
Maybe I will. I'm saying. So they'll deliver it to you. You can try it for 100 days. And when you're not, you find out if you're happy or not. If you're not happy, they'll pick it right back up. So, you know, if you go into a store, you get maybe a few minutes to try a mattress. You get to lie down. You get to sit in the store and feel really embarrassed about lying down on a mattress. And with Casper, you get to spend the whole night on it and find out how good it is. It's $500 for a twin-sized mattress and $950 for a king-sized. What size mattress do you sleep on, Mikey?
I'm on a full.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I would have thought.
Don't judge me. Don't judge me, Victor.
I would have thought you would have slept on a queen.
Good stuff.
Yeah. So comparing that to industry averages for prices for mattresses, that's a pretty good price point. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/insider and using the code insider. Terms and conditions apply, but check it out. So you've got your Apple Watch, right?
Yep.
You wear it a lot?
Every day.
You think everyone else should have one?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
What are you saying?
It's not made for everyone. You have to
be... That sounds superiority complex right there.
No, it's the opposite. You have to be dedicated to the iOS ecosystem. You have to want what the watch is good at providing, like health data and stuff, and maybe not care so much about the things that, you know, it's not so good at, like, I mean, even the native apps are slow, so you're going to have to make concessions for that. Hmm. So it's not really a fully baked product, I feel.
Okay. Well, 62% of people disagree with you. 62% of the current owners are planning to gift Apple Watch to others. Now, this was a poll from a Reuters poll, Reuters and Ipsos, published this on Tuesday. And basically... 15,595 people said they were planning to give an Apple Watch as a gift, which could be, you know, about 16 million units if you translate it into census projections, right?
Yeah.
Do you think those people are making a mistake? Do you think it's a good gift?
No, I mean, well, Yeah, it's a good gift. I mean, just like the iPod was a good gift. Mm-hmm. If your significant other or friend or family member enjoys technology and that kind of stuff, it's a great gift.
Cool. Well, for those of you listening out there who do want to give it as a gift, Best Buy dropped the Apple Watch pricing to $249 with a wave of $100 discounts. And this was another story that Neil wrote. So Best Buy went ahead and is putting it out there with $100 discounts. B&H did this. There were other discounts like this during our Black Friday sales that we saw. So it looks like it's pretty easy for people who are shopping for an Apple Watch to get a good deal on one.
Yeah. I mean, some people are saying that they're making room for new models, but I don't really see that. It's too early in the game for that. Maybe a month before, mm-hmm. clear out channel inventory. But I think Apple just really wants to get Watch and Watch OS.
This is a bid to just get more people using it?
Yeah, they want to expand their user base, and that's a good way to do it. I mean, $250 is about where I would peg the value of the Sport mm-hmm. watch. I think so. What do you think? Do you have one?
I do not own one yet.
Oh, well, now's your chance.
Well, maybe. Hearing you guys talk about how some things aren't exactly fully baked makes me hold off. And it's not because I think it's not good. It's because I want to make sure that I know what I want out of it and what to expect out of it. And I haven't felt a serious need for it yet. You know, yeah. I think my biggest use would be when I go grocery shopping, paying at the checkout with Apple Pay. Mm-hmm. And I currently do that with the phone just fine. So I don't feel a compelling need to go get the watch to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good for Apple Pay, obviously. Also good for notifications. And it's a really good health tracker.
I do like the health tracking.
It's really good.
iOS 9.2 came out, or I should say that, was it released for everyone yet? Or has it just been released to developers as the final gold master?
No.
Everyone got it?
Yep.
Cool. So that's one of the things that happens is that I have the developer account, and because I have the developer account, I sometimes have a hard time telling if we're getting something a week early or if it's just this is the release. But I installed 9.2. And for those of you who follow the podcast, that's big news because I have been on iOS 8.4.1 up until now. And so I had a lot of trouble with iOS 9 when it was first released. But I am glad to say that 9.2 is awesome, that all of the things that I have difficulties with are completely fixed and I have no trouble and I'm totally behind it. There are a few wrinkles with it that people have noticed, but for the most part, the installing the 9.2 update should not pose a problem. It should solve a problem with the iPad Pro causing the tablet to go black and stop responding to touch or button input. And it's really, really sharp. There were updates to Apple Music. There were updates to a top stories section in news, mail drop function for large mail attachments.
Editor curated top stories.
Mm.
So and they're moving to curation now.
Nice. iBooks was updated with 3D Touch.
Yay.
But I'm happy with it. And I'm glad because there was a long time when I didn't want to install it. And I was kind of worried that Apple sort of lost their way on quality control on things. But this is good.
I wonder if the iPad blackout is similar to... Because I'm getting same thing on my 6S from time to time. And I'm not sure exactly what triggers it. It seems to just... occur on its own. So it could be maybe an issue with push or some other background process. But I have been forced to hard reset my phone or hard restart my phone. Hard restart my phone.
And tell our users a tip. How do you do that?
You just hold down the home and sleep wake buttons, also known as the power button, together until you see the Apple logo pop up on your screen.
And then you release them.
Yep.
Cool. About 15 seconds, more or less.
About, yep.
Excellent. Well, that's a tip from Mikey Tips Campbell. This has been the Apple Insider Podcast. We've been recording here on December 11th. And if Mikey suffers spontaneous blackouts and stops responding to touch, we'll be sure to tell you about it all next week on next week's Apple Insider Podcast.
We'll be right back.